Hey, listeners of Compliments to the Chef, it's Nance. And we are excited to give you our coverage of the season finale of season 10. But before that, Bits has some exciting news to share with all of you.
I do. We are so thrilled to announce our very first second helping for season 22. It's a bit of a like pre-season 22. It's going to come out this Monday, our interview with none other than season 21 finalist Savannah Miller. We had such an amazing time catching up with her. She's so much fun. She went into tons of detail on just preparing for the show, experience on the show. Real, real cool chick. So we'll be dropping that Monday, March 10th. You can tune in here and just get hyped up with us for the premiere next Thursday. And then beyond that, you can look for our weekly recaps every Friday.
Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we have reached, and I'm your host, Bits, very transactional here today, because we have reached the end of season 10 Seattle.
God almighty, we've been over here forever.
I know.
This season, and over here meaning Seattle. This is a long season.
The extra three episodes really make a difference.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
They really do. And for that reason, we have a special double up episode. Nancy and I made the unilateral decision of covering the semifinale and the finale in one go.
One today. Fell swoop, baby. Because, you know, I think that they stretched this finale over two episodes and we'll contain it to one is how I feel.
I feel like we went on that like really long tangent earlier in the season about, you know, when it was Restaurant Wars Part 1, Part 2. And we were like, oh, what are all the sequels we loved and listed them off? Now I'm going to list all the sequels I hate and wish that were a single movie.
Okay, do it. Go.
Well, definitely the Twilight movies, Breaking Dawn Part 1 and Part 2. That could have been one. The Harry Potter finales, the Deathly Hallows. That could have been one. I think I actually listed these earlier in the season, but I'm going to reuse them and use them as a lesson learned here. Like, we need to stop breaking this stuff up.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Wicked, splitting that into two is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't need to happen. Too. It is a singular piece of art that is contained in a two-hour show on Broadway. Why do we need two,
and then we have to get the press tour all over again. Yeah, not looking forward to that.
You know my ins and outs for 2025. One of my outs was press tour monoculture. I don't need a Wicked press tour. I don't need a This Is Us press tour. I don't need a Barbie press tour. Just let the movie come out. Please stop bombarding us with stupid like manufactured viral moments.
Yes.
I don't want to hold space for any press tours.
I held such little space that I even forgot the Oscars were last night.
Oh, did you watch?
No, I completely forgot until today. Someone said that that was like a highlight of their weekend. I was like, oh.
Dude, award shows
or like
really
something they
boring.
Did. Maybe not the highlight. That's kind of a crazy. but yeah. Anyways, speaking of things that are much too long, these two episodes. So, Nancy,
let's
feel like
get into
we should
it.
Get into it.
Let's begin.
All right, Nancy, we're gonna double amuse-bouche. So let's start with episode 16. famously, the episode where we see the return of Last Chance Kitchen winner, drumroll please, Kristen Kish.
She's back, baby.
She's back. The Kish is back. Before we get into all of that, though, amuse-bouche reactions, episode 16.
A amuse-bouche reaction to episode 16 is like the challenge felt like a – once again, we have a quick-fire challenge for an elimination. And like we have had a few moments in the season where it felt like the quick-fire was worthy of an elimination. I'm thinking particularly of the 300 plates on the cruise ship. But this felt like the opposite. It felt like an elimination challenge that could have been a quick fire. Like, absolutely no pretense, like, no setup, just like, get in there.
Yeah, go cook a three-course meal, everybody.
And be the only chef in the kitchen, and Tom's going to expedite.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your amuse-bouche?
It is boring. Like, I thought it was boring. There wasn't really any backbone to the challenge. There wasn't any creative constraint. I was pretty shocked. Like, I'm just going to leave it at that, and let's chat early up, because I was shocked to learn that it had been 6 months.
Yeah.
Since they were on, I'm like, that is a long time to be out of it. Like, that at that point, I'm like, this is anybody's game, because,
yes,
you know, last we saw them, Brooke had really started cooking. Sheldon was like in a good groove. He was tripping up a little bit here and there. And then, you know, Kristen obviously back to back Last Chance Kitchen, but like, that's a lot of momentum to kill.
I really wonder why they did it this way. It was really interesting because you could see when Brooke was showing the photo, like, she was posting a photo of a dish online, and Zagat wrote it up. RIP Zagat.
Yeah.
We're not, because this is our final episode, we're not going to be able to left over it. But I do think, like, a fun study of the Zagat phenomenon should be done on the pod. But
I can't believe they haven't had, like a biopic about somebody behind
Zagat. Zagat really dropped the ball. Like, when I think about the infatuation, like, all of these sites, Zagat was such a prestige thing, and it just disappeared. And
wow,
now
so true.
You have, like, Yelp and sort of, like, user-generated content, or you have Michelin. Like, those are the only two rating systems. Like, completely subjective.
Besides, like, New York Times or something.
Yeah, but anyway, I digress. What I was going to say, because you see Brooke post it, Zagat, like, highlights it in an article online. And if you looked closely, I paused my screen, it said, like, from Top Chef contestant Brooke Williamson. So clearly the show was airing. Like,
yeah.
Because this was a live finale. So they had to air the whole show and then, like, do it live. So there was already press around them, and they were already being identified as associated with the show before the finale ever even came out.
Yeah. Ooh, weird.
Weird.
Ooh, what's that all about? Yeah, I don't know. Just too much time. It's always fun to get, like, a little home vignette. We see Sheldon back on the beach in Hawaii doing a little barbecue for his fam. He was very sweet. He gave his, like, wife just such a lovely, like, shout out. Like, I'm pretty lucky to have a wife that lets me go away like that. Like, honestly, though, good for them. It was very cute. And his cute
loved
kids.
It. But anyway, so Kristen Kish back in the kitchen, and we are informed that there will be no quick fire, and that the elimination challenge is the chefs must create a three-course meal and cook it in the kitchen of Tom Colicchio's Craft in LA. And Tom will be expediting, and the judges will be eating it. And so, like, they're given no time to conceptualize a meal. I think I want to get to this when we talk about the finale and not the semifinals, but unfortunately for this season, they never get the prompt of, like, cook us the best meal of your life, you know, which is usually the finale prompt, which is a beautiful finale prompt. I always like that.
Yeah.
But it's like, at no point were they given the opportunity, because even in Alaska, when it was like, cook a dish that's really meaningful to you, I guess that was sort of this season's version of cook us the meal of your life. But even that had some creative constraints to it. And I wouldn't say that this had creative constraints, but it did have constraints in that, like, they had to use what was in the fridge there, and they had to cook in a foreign kitchen and conceptualize a menu really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So at no point were they given the opportunity to, like, sit down and be like, this meal represents me.
Yeah. I completely agree. I don't think anything was, like, particularly different about the semifinal or the final.
Yes.
In terms of, like, the framework of it. Mm-hmm. And I would actually go so far as to say, and this may be jumping ahead, maybe we just – I don't care. These things are hard to detangle in my mind, but I think
we shouldn't jump straight to the finale. But let me look in my notes if there's anything particularly about the semifinals that I wanted to make sure we discussed. I don't know.
I think the things with the semifinal, it felt like everybody played it kind of safe.
Mm-hmm.
It felt, I think the general assessment was it was a little easy, a little safe. I really did enjoy watching Tom expedite. I think that was like exactly a cool vignette to see him sort of in his element. Yeah, that was really exciting. You can, like, he fully shifted into a different gear than what we typically see him in, which I think was really fun. Brooke was like kind of lagging. Kristen was sort of figuring out the dessert as she went. And then I think, like, really the only other thing of note here is that Sheldon made a quail, like, kind of out of left field. Like,
yeah, it was
like
crazy, a
super decision,
fine
actually.
Dining dish.
Yeah, in the middle of this sort of – I think he started strong. He didn't end very strong with the dessert. It was unfinished. But I don't know. There wasn't anything interesting here on this menu to talk about. But is there anything that we want to –
Yeah,
from your
I would
side?
Say that my absolute favorite part of the episode was seeing Tom in the kitchen. And I think that's something that, like, at this time in his career, like, of course he was so successful and had a million restaurants and was obviously not in the kitchen of every single one of his restaurants on any given night. But, like, we are at this – in the year 2025 – so far gone from this moment. Like, I don't think we'd ever see Tom expediting in the kitchen like this in season 22.
Yeah.
The way we would in season 10. And so it was just like so cool to see him in his element, because it's just like an angle of him that we're never really going to get from him anymore. He's on to like making them go fishing because he likes fishing, as opposed to like cooking my kitchen, you know? But I really love seeing him in his element. The things that I like, and there are moments of note, like, he literally sent a dish back to Brooke being like, replate that, it's cold. And I'm curious. It's just interesting, because what was interesting about making them do a full service was that that wasn't entered into the judging criteria. Like, Tom came out at the end and was like, you know, somewhere behind on their mise en place. And so Brooke got out of the weeds and, you know, Chris, like, yada, yada, yada. But that was not taken into consideration at all. So it begs the question.
No, you're so right.
Why make them serve an entire restaurant of diners if that element of it is not part of the challenge or part of the judging of the challenge?
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's so true, though. It ups the ante for the viewer and maybe ups the stakes where there would otherwise not have really been stakes this episode. But then it didn't really follow through in any meaningful way. I completely agree. That was a good flag.
It just like felt ill-formulated.
So, yeah, but I think – and this is like a meta point, and this also speaks to why I think we just feel compelled to cover these two episodes together, is once you get down to the finale, it really isn't the most interesting part of Top Chef.
Correct.
The best part is when you personally, like, double digits, and you're getting to the lower double digits, but it's still double digits, and it sort of can be anybody's game. You sort of don't have a feel for everybody just yet. The challenges are a little sillier, a little more complex or creative. So at this point, I feel like they sort of have to – no, I just was going to say at this point, like, things get so serious that I think they just maybe feel like they can't play with fire quite so much, both the chefs and the, you know, showrunners.
Yeah, and what I was going to say is, like, this is true of all competition reality TV. Like, it's good at the beginning because the drama and the entertainment comes from having a lot of people around, whether it's Top Chef or, like, The Bachelor. When it gets really lovey-dovey and it's just two people saying I love you, it's boring. You want to see, like, drunk girls getting in the fight over the guy. And on Top Chef, you want to see, like, team challenges. You want to see a lot of dishes. You want to see a ton of comparison. You want to see a spectrum of performance. And at the end, and here's the thing. This is what we love about Top Chef, is that it is prestigious. They get the best people. But at the end, it's essentially just a cooking show, because you're just watching people who are really good at what they do what they're good at. And there is no intrigue. Like, there are very few finales where someone makes a huge gaffe. I mean, I can think of, like, Sarah with the foie gras. But even then, it wasn't like – I don't know. It just
– it's nobody's
fault. It's not the most interesting stuff at the end of the season. It's no one's fault. But that said –
it's truly down to a hair. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of that hair, I was surprised that the cards fell in Kristen's favor based on judges' table. Well, how did you feel?
I was too. I think I knew that Brooke was going to be fine. I didn't get the sense. Yeah, it did seem like a toss-up between Brent, Sheldon and Kristen. I don't know why I'm like wanting to call him Brendan. literally never used that name before in this context. Yeah, it did feel like a bit of a toss-up. It felt like, I don't know, they were just sort of like meh on everybody's. Like there just wasn't anything. It just didn't spark joy for me. Didn't seem like it sparked joy for the judges.
Yeah. The more I think about it, a lot of episodes this season ended with the judges being like pretty underwhelmed. I mean, we had the epic one where everybody did poorly, the lunch one in Pike Place Market.
Yeah.
But there were a few episodes where they were like, you know, no one really stood out. But the reason why I was surprised yeah. that Sheldon went home instead of Kristen was not because Sheldon's food was so good, but it felt like there were flaws in everything Kristen put out. And particularly her yes. dessert, which was like, Sheldon at least did something a little interesting. Kristen literally melted chocolate and threw curry powder in it and like just served it in yeah. a bowl. It wasn't even a solidified form of anything. Like Sheldon at least made a mousse, you know, and like put some apples yeah. and fennel yeah. on top. There were maybe some
and
flaws executionally, I feel like Sheldon got like he tried.
Yeah, and I feel like Sheldon got overly dinged for making something that they didn't expect him to make. Yeah. What, so like now, like I'm losing points because I made something that you didn't think I was going to make. And so
that was technically that, seemed, fine.
Yeah, it seemed like they really harped on the sort of like non-Sheldon-ness of it versus it not being good, which it seemed to be totally fine, except for the pine nuts, I guess. But yeah, that kind of like, okay, that threw me a bit. Mm-hmm. Can I just say, I hate like seared tuna. I hate. Like, I hate it.
Tuna should either be served worst. Raw or from a can. That's it.
Yeah. Why do you want it, the edges of it seared? Just eat it raw or just eat it in a can.
I completely agree.
I think tuna steaks are just disgusting.
Disgusting.
That's my judgy table. There we go. Judgy table for episode 16 is fucking tuna steaks.
Tuna steaks suck. My judgy table for episode 16 is like wherever this was in Los Angeles is like incredibly ugly. Like it was so industrial. This building, it didn't look like
you're coming for the West Coast big time.
Big time. Turns out I'm just a coastal elite from New York City. Hey,
don't like your coast. From the north to the south. Don't like it.
Don't like it. Don't like it. But okay, why don't we move on past this? Into the finale, the Thunderdome.
The finale. Okay, so the point that I kind of like sat on for a bit. So in this finale, we have, for the first time ever, a live airing, taping situation of the Top Chef finale. So yes, like as Nancy mentioned, Brooke and Kristen and their, you know, ragtag team of sous chefs enter what is essentially like truly the Thunderdome. There's a full live audience. There are all of the winning previous Top Chefs. The judges are there. The family and friends are there. It's like kind of crazy. So the first place I want to start, Nancy, is thoughts on this format overall. This is the first time we see this from Top Chef.
Thank you.
I want to hear where your head's at.
Thank you for giving me the floor here because I have a lot of thoughts. My overarching thought is that this felt very antithetical to the spirit of Top Chef, this format. Mm. It did not feel true to the form of what we love about Top Chef, what people expect from Top Chef, and what makes Top Chef different from other cooking competitions. There are tons of cooking competitions that do this like arena style throwdown. And there were at this point in time. It's not like it's a new thing. Like
right.
Iron Chef existed at this point, which is an arena style cooking show. Chopped is sort of like this, where there are different rounds. And like it just – this didn't feel like a fair finale for the caliber and style of chef that makes it to the finale of Top Chef.
Yes. Completely agree on all fronts. One thing, the first sort of thing that jumped into my head when I saw this was, you know how when you're used to watching something as a TV show and then they come out with a feature length film and you're like, wow, it's weird to see people with this camera on film. Yes. Yes. That was this to me. I was like, I don't like this weird reality. It just felt completely different. Just the tone and the look and the feel of it. It just threw me. And I think that exactly to what you said, just added to this pile of it, just felt very antithetical to Top Chef in a lot of different ways. Even the format. So the chefs had to each prepare 5 dishes. The first one to win 3 dishes won Top Chef. And they had 3 sous chefs each, which we'll talk about in a second. But again, I want to zoom in on the challenge itself, which to me is just Last Chance Kitchen on steroids.
Yes, I completely agree. It's a format of challenge that happens way early in the season, and it tests skills that are not important for the finale.
Yeah.
The finale is supposed to be cook us the meal of your life, impress us, blow us away, give us everything you've got. And here, not only was it like this weird live audience, but also it was not a coursed out meal. The dishes did not have to have any relation to one another. Like there were, I think part of the difference between Top Chef and then the like the regular season and the finale is like they are coming to the judges with their fully realized concept, their Gesamtkunstwerk of a performance, you know, where everything is working together, where they have to plan the menu, choose the plates, like – really understand the coursing of it and why and have it tell a story. None of that had to exist here. All they had to do was put banger after banger after banger. Didn't matter if it was like related to the dish before or after.
No and progression. I think that's so true. I didn't even think about that.
That's
not
what we want out of a Top Chef finale. It's just
And they
not.
Had these two. So they got 5 dishes, but then they randomly had 2 courses that they had to be consistent on. There was the second course had to have scallop and the fourth course had to have snapper, which, okay. like, was there just a lot on set? It just seems like really specific.
Was big fish like
But let's back
them?
Up. Before we talk about the food, let's talk about the sous chefs. So
yes.
It was also very vague how they ended up picking these teams. I would have liked to have seen that.
Yes. And sorry, if I can interject because I want to ask you the question that I know you're going to ask me, but I want to give you the chance to answer it. But before that, it also was clear that they did not explain to either Kristen or Brooke what the studio was going to be like that they were cooking in.
Brooke was pretty shocked.
Like, that's so unfair for the most important meal of the show to be that unknown.
Yeah.
Unprecedented, wasn't a fan. But let me ask you the question that I know you were going to generously ask me. Which is, talk to me about if given the opportunity from the season 10 roster to pick your ideal team, 2 questions here. One, who would be on your team? And 2, if you had to pick between Kristen and Brooke's teams, which one would you pick?
Okay, my ideal roster would probably be – oh, man. I mean, honestly, with the – I would definitely say Sheldon. I would put Sheldon on my roster because I think he's just a workhorse. Like if you just put him on Mies, he'd just be like, all right, yep.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point.
So I feel like he moves fast. I feel like he's like a good energy to work with. And I feel like he would know his limits and in like check in with me, which we didn't see with CJ, which was a problem for Brooke.
Mm-hmm.
God, who else? This has been the longest season ever. Kaneko, I think, was a good choice for Brooke. Yeah, that was a good pick. Geez, I don't know. I mean, I will say CJ was a good pick. He went really far on Last Chance Kitchen. I don't know how much of that information that they got. I wouldn't have picked Josh, I don't think.
No. You know who I really wouldn't have picked? Stefan.
Yeah. What? I don't know. Especially because Stefan was like kind of homies with Kristen like the whole time.
He's so bitter about losing the first time. He's clearly bitter about not making it to the second finale. he at no point in the season like blew me away. And he just seems like the type of guy who does not take direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how they I think like in aggregate, I would have 100% preferred Kristen's team.
Same.
Which I thought was really interesting. I don't – again, like we don't know how that shook out. But the fact that she ended up – she wound up with all of the finalists that were eliminated before, you know, while she was away – just struck me as kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. 'Cause seeing them all together, I was like, oh, yeah, like, duh, you picked the most recently eliminated. But then realizing, oh, she actually hasn't – I mean, I guess she saw them in Last Chance Kitchen. But I don't know. I thought that it was – I would have liked to have known, yeah, how they wound up picking.
I know. I was like, did I miss something? And then also, the very first thing that happens is Tom goes, you know the challenge? Begin. Would you like to inform the viewers at home?
Yeah, weird all around. And so anyways, excuse me, let's get into the food. Okay, before we get into the food. The best part about this finale
I'm so happy that you're going to say this.
Michael Vitaggio in the audience.
It has that table that man, of Top Chef alums. Like, I would give anything to sit at that table.
They were so hyped. They're like, I just want to get down there. Like, Michael Vitaggio, I literally wrote every single quote he made, like, reference he made. Quote, I'm jealous, dude. I want to be down there. Michael Vitaggio, dude, it's intense down there. Michael Vitaggio literally, like, bouncing out of his seat, just like, I gotta get down there.
They were living for it, which was so much fun to watch. But they were also clearly very drunk, which was really funny. Like, I just love the camaraderie of, like, all these winners being like, hell yeah. Like, Bravo flew us out here. We're about to eat this finale meal. Like, we just get to be in the audience. Like, this rocks. And I'm going to be honest.
Living large.
This was the first time all of them had ever been in the same room, let alone at the same table.
I bet it was too. I guess they did it for episode or season 10 as like a special nod to 10 years.
So much fun watching them at this table the whole time.
Yes.
I truly could have just sat, like, been a fly on the wall of that table and enjoyed myself.
I would have honestly preferred had this finale just been cooked for the top, the last 10
winners.
Yeah,
that would be sick. Oh, my God. And like, that should be a challenge.
Yeah. That would be sick. Cook for the, like, last 20 winners. I'd rather, like, die.
I'd poop my pants.
I'd poop my pants.
Yeah,
okay. I guess let's talk about the food. The food was, like, the least interesting part of this.
It really was the least interesting part of this. There was so much filler. So, okay, course one, we have Brooke puts out crispy pig ear and chicory salad. The salad she made at her restaurant that we saw her, like, create as, like, a special and then Zagat put out. And then Kristen did a chicken liver mousse with frisée. Kristen, like, every time Kristen won, she swept the judges. So, like, she was the clear front runner here. They loved her chicken liver mousse. They said it was seasoned perfectly, simple, classic, very airy. They gave her a little bit of a ding on the plating that it maybe wasn't the smartest plating. But overall, they were pretty blown away.
Did we get – I mean, did we hear all of the judges' feedback or did they just stop at three because it was just a majority rule? Because I had the thought, like, I didn't hear what Tom and Padma voted on it. And I actually kind of thought that was fucked up that they didn't say it because – I feel like that could have been a morale boost to Brooke.
Yeah.
But I noticed that they specifically did not share their reaction.
Yeah, I thought that
like
was
they did that a few
choice.
Times.
I thought that was really odd. Because in the past when they've done formats like this, they say like, okay, everyone, how do you vote? And like, raise your hand for this person or raise your hand for this person. And it felt just super not well thought through.
No, and, like, at least have everybody write it down. Like, somebody could 100% change their mind in the time that, like, someone else is giving the answer. Like, Get these people some tiny chalkboards, if you know what I mean.
Amen, bits. I completely agree. Mm. But so, yeah, I mean, they all were able to give feedback. Like, a lot of them comment on it. But when it comes to the voting, they stopped revealing the judges' votes once someone reached three.
Right. Right. Which, yeah, that – I don't know. So, anyways, let's talk – so, Kristen theoretically sweeps that one. For the second course, that's our mandatory scallop course.
Sorry, on the first course, the thing that is of note about Brooke's performance is that they thought it was delicious, but that CJ had inconsistently cooked the pig ear. And they – I mean, I think rightfully so, as you would in any kitchen. They dinged Brooke for being accountable for her team's mistake.
For sure, yeah. I mean, can we also talk about – CJ was bent at a 90-degree angle that entire time.
That man is so fucking tall.
He was just parallel to the table, his, like, upper half.
Seeing him stand next to Tom in, like, the Last Chance Kitchen recap, I was like, oh, my God, is he 7 feet tall?
That – I can't even – I'm trying to, like, picture how low a table would have to be to make my body move like that. It was – crazy. I'm like, I can't believe this guy is a chef and wants to be bent over like this all day.
Problems.
Oh my God. Anyway, so yeah, the burn was disappointing. Okay, so on to the second course, the mandatory scallop course. Brooke does a seared scallop salt cod puree with some crispy speck, black currant, and mustard seed vinaigrette. So hers, if we kind of hold up hers and Kristen's, Kristen's for this one did a citrus and lavender cured scallop. Mm-hmm. If we hold these two up next to each other, I think it's a pretty good summation of what we saw from each chef.
Yeah.
Brooke kind of went a lot of flavors, kind of a lot, like just throwing a lot of bold stuff on top of each other was sort of her strategy throughout the meal. Mm-hmm. And Kristen on the other side was very much like simple, celebrate the protein, less is more. And surprisingly, Brooke took this one, at least for me.
I was also kind of surprised because it just seemed like there was so much going on this plate. Something that normally the judges would critique her for. But it must have been delicious.
I was surprised it didn't get more. And Stephanie Izzard flagged that and was like, I kind of love that she just sort of like layers a bunch of stuff. So, yeah, I probably would have gone Kristen just based on looks alone and just description. But Brooke takes this one. It does come down to it's a tie. Hugh Atchison breaks the tie.
Eyebrows.
So that's the second course down. And, you know, nothing to do with the first course.
Absolutely.
Nor will the third course have anything to do with this one.
Yep. Because Brooke goes for a fried chicken wing. I think she's looking for a little redemption. There was a very funny moment in episode 16, the one before the finale, where they're in the walk-in in Kraft. And Sheldon calls out to Brooke like, hey, there's some chicken breast here if you want to fry it.
I missed that.
Which was so shady, but so funny.
Man.
I loved it.
Yeah, I did like the moment too, this episode from Stefan where he was like, oh, really? Like fried chicken? Fuck you. I honestly, so what we were talking about with the semifinal, you know, your observation that things just become less interesting because there's less drama, because there's less characters. I really wish they would do more with the ensemble supporting Sue when they do that. I get it. It's time for Kristen and Brooke to shine, but you have all these amazing personalities around. Like, could you not just feature them a little bit more, get a little bit more
fill
texture
the space.
And personality? Yeah, like fill the room, fill the space, fill the airtime. I don't know. It just was like, yeah, it just feels so weird to see these people just like put in the background.
I totally agree.
Anyways.
But so Brooke makes her fried chicken wing, which the feedback is, it's delicious. It's unexpected. But the dish itself feels a bit disjointed. Like there are too many components on the plate that don't – the salad felt unnecessary.
Yeah.
And then Kristen made a – this sounded so good. Oh, my God. Crispy bone marrow with mushrooms and celery puree. This, I feel like, is Tom Colicchio on a plate.
Yeah.
Just so delicious sounding. They said looked great beautiful. Earthy tones. Padma complained that her dish was not hot. But Gail is really gunning for Kristen. I don't mean that to mean that she's biased, but like she was just in love with what Kristen was putting out.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
dish it felt like she yeah, just was I think bowled over.
Gail was definitely in the pocket, in Kristen's pocket. Hugh was definitely in Brooke's pocket. Mm-hmm. Emerald just sort of like loved everybody's. I think that Tom's assessment of Brooke's dish here was a really fair and reasonable one, which is just like, he was sort of like, I don't know why you did it. Like, I know why you did it, but I don't know why you did it.
Yeah.
And just kind of like belabored the point that this is not the food you should put out at this stage of the competition, mm-hmm. which it sucked. And then you have the flip side of that, which is the table of top chefs who are all like, wow, that's ballsy. Like, that's yeah. pretty cool.
And
so I don't know.
And again, Steph Izzard said, like, you know, I love that she's putting new things on the plate. Like, there she's really experimenting. And so it's interesting to see from the perspective of the judges versus the perspective of former top chefs what's important to them and what, you know, yeah. they find exciting or new or interesting. Because, I mean, even Kristen says it, like, she's a super traditional chef. Like, she does not cook with Asian flavors. Like, Sheldon made a funny joke about that. He was like, you're the whitest Asian person. And, you know, and then she even said, she was like, I guess I'll go to Korea now because, like, I need to learn my roots.
I love that.
But, yeah, it was just interesting. And so then let's bring us – so Kristen wins that round with the crispy bone marrow, which brings us to the fourth course. So it's now 2-1 Kristen. Kristen just needs to win one more. And spoiler alert, she wins the fourth round with her – they both have to make red snapper. And she prepares her red snapper with a shellfish, nage, uni, leeks, little gem lettuce, and tarragon. And Brooke does surf and turf. I don't want surf and turf.
Yeah, I don't know. I just want it separate. We've talked about this. If the task is to make
red snapper, why put like pork shoulder on the plate?
Because we needed one last hurrah. We needed one last pork product.
And it sounded like it was delicious. They loved it. They said everything was perfectly cooked and it was a well put together dish. But I think it sort of just missed the mark of the challenge, which was like, you know, give us a snapper dish.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it felt a little overwrought. But then again, I think everything felt kind of busy because it was busy because none of these dishes worked together.
And like you were in a stadium with people cheering and like it's just the setting itself was not conducive to any sort of like good thinking refinement. Almost like it's just so yeah, high intensity yeah. There were so many variables at play, none of which were really conducive to like a setting them up for success.
Completely,
like I think
agree.
It really could have yeah, gone it just one was, of two ways.
Yeah, like when I think back on a finale, you know, I don't know, I guess maybe because we covered season 6 and that was the most kind of recent rewatch we did aside from mm-hmm. just a live season viewing. That one was, you know, you had Napa, you had working with sort of like fresh farm to table, which I guess at the time of that season was sort of like still novel. But there just felt like there was like a teeth or texture to it. And this one just, I don't know. It's sort of – we just sort of abandoned Top Chef, like the things that are enjoyable about Top Chef. But yeah. All to say, super exciting. Kristen takes the win. She goes mm-hmm. on to be the host we have now.
Fame and fortune.
You know, some stuff in between. Fame and fortune.
Yeah. I mean, both of them, I am glad, have had the opportunity to win Top Chef. Brooke comes back.
Yeah.
She wins season 14 and – you know, like she takes it in a very traditional Top Chef finale and she gets her just desserts, which are very well deserved.
Yes.
She's gone on to great things as well. And now we are blessed with Kristen Kish on our screens every week.
Every week.
every week, including
Nancy
next week.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh my God, it's here.
Well, Nancy, this brings us to the end of our season 10 rewatch. It's been a fun ride. It's been a long ride. But I'm ready to come back on this side of the continent and head up north a bit and hang out in Toronto with you.
Oh, I'm so excited. But before we do that, we have some really exciting announcements, which is in anticipation of the season premiere of season 22, we have secured an interview with season 21 runner-up Savannah Miller. You can hear our interview with her on Monday to get you hyped for season 22 starting on Thursday next week. This episode is so great. Like, the juiciest tidbits about the behind the scenes of filming and preparing. You do not want to miss this interview. I promise you.
Very fun. Savannah was as fun to talk to as we could have possibly hoped.
Yeah. Like, it was everything we could have hoped for and more. And then, speaking of everything we could have hoped for and more, do we tell them?
I think so.
We have our Mount Rushmore pick, Joe Flam, coming on the pod. For those who are avid listeners, you know that we do second helpings after each week. We like to do a second episode where we interview former cast members, members of the production cast and crew. And week one, second helping will be the Riz King of Top Chef himself, Joseph Flam, straight off the streets of the South Side of Chicago. Another incredible interview that we look forward to sharing with all of you. So, starting off season 22 with a bang.
Big old bang.
Big old bang. And we cannot wait. So, listeners, we love you. And we're excited to start this journey once again with you. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.